Hey, it's Brian Murphy. Let your money do more for you. Discover Provident Credit Union's Pick a Term Certificate Special. With Provident's Pick a Term Certificate, you can watch your money grow quickly. Secure a 4.75% annual percentage yield with a 3, 6, or 9-month term, or earn 4.50% with a 12-month term. This limited-time offer is a great option for high dividends on a term that works best for you. Earn up to 4.75% and achieve your short-term savings goals with ease. So whether you're saving for a vacation, a down payment, or just building your emergency fund, Provident has you covered. Don't miss out. Secure one of the most competitive rates available on the market. Open an account and start earning more. Visit providentcu.org or stop by a branch for more details. This rate is effective as of March 26th, 2024. Minimum balance requirement of $10,000. Early withdrawal penalties may apply. Federally insured by the NCUA. For additional information, please visit providentcu.org.
All right, nice to have you back with us, Bruce Jenkins. It is early. Thank you for getting up early, and a pleasure to have you with us this morning.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be on, Marty, as always.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you have your coffee ready?
You know, I haven't, but I think I'm sharp enough to remember some of the things from from yesterday.
I'll tell you, it was, Bruce, you know, I want to talk a lot about baseball and what's going on in the game today, because there's a lot of exciting things happening. And I just had this feeling that baseball's back. It's back. The way these games are being played, the competitiveness and everything that's going on. And we saw it firsthand last night with the Marlins and the Giants. You could give me 12 things in the game last night, and every one was dramatic.
Yeah, no kidding. I had a really pleasurable evening watching that, and then I managed to stay up and watch the Dodgers in San Diego as well, and that was a tremendous game, just really tense. And by the end of the night and woke up this morning, I thought, yeah, the game is so great, and there's so many complaints about it, but the way that it exists right now, without you know, too many changes, it's just excellent. It feels exactly how it's supposed to, in so many different ways. But yeah, the Giants game was really wild, and just, you know, really you had fans thinking along with the manager all the way along, good and bad, and you know, just so many unexpected things. You figure Jake McGee comes in, he's allowed like one hit all year. All of a sudden, they're peppering him around, and they tie the game. And they run out of players. They've got DeSclafani hitting in a crucial situation, and then now he's on the bases. And when Belt hits that big double, anybody but DeSclafani, anybody, you know, a regular player is going to score there. It's a run they would have needed. But you know, the great pinch hit call with Slater, that was a stroke of genius, and just. It's just so much fun.
Yeah, so many things happened. And I thought the play of the game, really, which changed the end of the game, was the play that Aguilar made at first base when he bobbled the ball that caught it in his hand.
Dubon, that was amazing.
And the replay showed that Dubon was out.
Yeah, he snatched it out of the air. Which, you know, it looks kind of easy in slow motion, but oh my goodness, that's the last thing you expect, to have it just pop up right next to you, and you can't bobble it. I mean, you bobbled it once, but you can't drop it there. You have to catch it clean, and just, you know, by inches they get him. That was a big play, and I thought Crawford made a big play too, with the bases loaded, two out, the place, whatever fans are there, you know, going crazy. He charges a ball, tough play, makes the out to end the inning. That was just Crawford in a nutshell. You know, pretty simple play for him, but in that situation, very, very clutch by a great shortstop.
You know, and then there were so many decisions. And I'll tell you one thing, this three-batter rule comes into play. There's no question that when you bring a reliever in to face a lefty-lefty and there's two righties coming up next, you've got to think about it.
Yeah, you really do. And, you know, for somebody who likes to use a lot of relievers, it was brought in so there would be fewer pitching changes and fewer relief pitchers. But how many relievers did the Giants use last night? Six? I mean, it felt like five or six. And it's interesting to me. I don't mind it so much. It's a little bit manufactured. You know, it takes the strategy away. When you really want to do something and you can't do it because of that rule, that's annoying. But I don't mind seeing a guy out there for three. Just, you know, I've as much success as the Giants had with one batter relievers like Lopez and Affelt. I like it when they get a little more rope.
Well, I thought Mattingly, you know, and I love the way he played as a Yankee, but boy, as a manager, I always think he's a step behind. And he got put in a situation last night where he brought in the lefty to face Duggar. And the switch was to be Slater. And Slater, who just kills left-handed pitching,
yeah,
hit the three-run homer, which just changed the game around. And you know what it reminded me of? And it's years ago. Bernie Carbo. I tell you, the home run he hit again in the World Series for the Red Sox,
sure,
against the Reds, it was that three-run homer in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
And everything turned
that's
around.
Center, right?
Yeah, everything turned around.
Yeah, that's, I do remember that. That was an epic moment in Red Sox lore. And, yeah, because, I mean, you can see once Slater comes up, you're going, oh, man, this guy murders left-handed pitchers. And it went to 2-0. It's like, well, you know, this is really looking good. And he really cashed in on it. I love the way he goes to straight up the middle and right field. That's kind of the way – that's his calling card.
That's right.
And it's very instructive for young hitters, I think, who see so many guys just trying to launch everything dead, pull it out of the park.
I said, leave him alone. Don't make this guy any other kind of crazy hitter. Just let him
do his
thing.
Yeah. Yes, please. Just, yeah.
Well, my feeling was that baseball's back. With
yes.
the excitement, there was just real excitement last night in the game. And the Dodger game had Kershaw and Darvish, and again, a very spirited game. And Kershaw gets into with Profar, who looked like he intentionally tried to hit the catcher's glove. And the way the game ends, Mookie Betts makes legitimately a really tough catch in right center field that he almost bobbled to win the game.
Again, it was a matter of like a fraction of an inch there. I mean, it didn't look – if anybody can get it, it's going to be him. But it didn't look like it was going to – he could catch it. But he went all out for it, and he just got in the heel of his glove. What an unbelievable play. And Kershaw, he was great all night long. I mean, he wasn't putting up from any guff from Profar, and he's yelling at him. And then what I loved is now he's up there working a walk from Darvish. He fouls off a couple pitches. You know, really tough at bat. He takes that last one for ball four. There was, you know, anybody could have lunged at that and wouldn't be embarrassed. But he's just a ball player. Yet another great thing from yesterday and from the. And like you say, the season is really off to a great start.
Yeah, it's a good division. It's now Colorado. I expect Bud Black. Hopefully, he still have a job when we see him a week from Monday. But
yeah.
And Arizona is a mess too. But the top three, including the Giants, when they go at each other, it's good baseball. It's good baseball. And the last thing I want to talk about on the Dodger thing was Turner. Bruce, this guy is just unbelievable, and I can't believe they messed around with him and they didn't want to sign him. Are they kidding me?
Oh. Yeah, he's one of those heart and soul guys, you know.
Yeah.
Off the field, he's huge for them. I mean, he made a big mistake pandemic wise in the World Series, but you know, you see ridiculous things like that in every walk of life all across the country. I mean, he was celebrating a title, but he's such a clutch hitter, big power guy. I thought even after the World Series, Andrew said, you know, they'd sign him up like tomorrow. You know, I mean, you have to have this guy. They dragged it out, but it's a good thing for them that they finally got him locked in, probably the last contract of his career, because they're really going to need him. And I tell you, that L.A.-San Diego series is going to be unbelievable the whole year. They've had rhubarbs in both games. Here's an old baseball term for you. A couple of brouhahas, you know.
And the pea patch, right. Yeah.
And just all these strategical moments, and you're just on the edge of your seat. So that's really going to be worth following. And it's a huge thing for the Dodgers if they get that early edge on them.
Well, they've won, I don't know, 9 in a row or whatever it is. They're 13-2. It's the best 15-game start for a former World Series champion, a defending champion. And this Turner, 5 homers and slugging .815, on base .467, hitting .426. So my point is this morning, just to celebrate baseball a little bit, that the excitement of the game is back. And we got 162. This is not August. and we're going to look at 60 games. We've got 162 of this. So a couple other ones. Salvador Perez. Kansas City's in first place in the American League Central. Bruce, he hit a ball yesterday to walk off to win the game, 459 feet. And if you know Kansas City, they got the fountains and all this, he knocked it over everything. How about that?
Yeah, they revere this guy in Kansas City. I mean, he's going to go down with maybe not quite the level of George Brett, but you know, he's the rock of that team. He has been for several years. You know, the Giants remember him from the World Series. But just as a presence, as a catcher, you know, the great throws that he make. He made a great throw to nail a guy at third that really helped decide a game. Clutch hits. But then all of a sudden he comes up with these blasts. I think that's about maybe the second really astounding home run that he's hit. What a valuable guy. I mean, he's an MVP type guy. And really, really a pleasure to watch.
Well, it's nice to see Kansas City off to a good start, too, and Mike Matheny, the manager there. What about Acuna? How about this guy? something with Acuna? You don't leave the TV screen. You watch what he's going to do.
Yeah, I would never compare anybody to Willie Mays, but there's an element to it with Acuna that – you know, he might hit three homers today. He might hit three triples today. He might steal three bases today. Mm-hmm. He might score at home plate when he has apparently no chance, but he gambled and by God, he did make it. He's just, he's a gambler and an incredible, he's a showman, but he's also very smart and unbelievably talented. You know, between he and Soto, that's just for starters. You talk about the young talent in the game, Tatis, but I've really been enjoying watching Soto and Acuna in particular because, man, he's exciting.
Boy, then the aces. You got Shane Bieber going today against Wade Miley, who has, you know, shut the Giants down. How about Jacob DeGrom, Bruce, yesterday?
Oh, man.
And again,
I was glad to see him win because he's gotten so little run support. You know, he strikes out 9 in a row.
Yes.
He was one short of Seaver. Seaver struck out
10 Padres, right?
10, yeah. It was the last 10 of a 19-strikeout game. I mean, good grief. And then today you got Trevor Bauer and Blake Snell in the Dodger-San Diego series. How's that for a matchup?
Yeah. No, but, I love the aces. DeGrom, 14 strikeouts yesterday for him. Scherzer, a big game for him. And then you get the A's are on fire. You know, they're 1-7. Everyone was going to bury them, and all of a sudden, they're just mowing down the whole league.
Yeah, terrific there. I'm really glad to see it. I was really happy to see the A's build what looked like a really good roster, you know, after Semien leaves and the ownership stuff and, you know, the usual trash over there that nobody wants to hear about. From a financial standpoint, I really like the club that they wound up starting the season with. And next thing you know, they're just, you know, they get crushed by the Astros and they can't do anything right. But it's all coming around now. You know, Chapman and Canna and Laureano, really good club. Really not a weakness, I don't think, in the lineup. And the rotation has a ton of potential. And, you know, good for Bob Melvin and the A's fans because that's they're right where they should be. They're getting back in it.
And if you're a Red Sox fan, you got them coming out of nowhere. Everyone predicted them coming in last. They're hitting the heck out of the ball. And the team in last place, and Bruce, if this continues, believe me, this will tilt the world on its axis. The Yankees have the worst record in the American League.
No, they're just getting crushed in the press back there, aren't they? People are throwing stuff at them from the stands. It's April.
They're throwing stuff at the newspaper.
Yeah, I don't know if it lasts with all the talent they have, but yeah, that's completely nuts. I mean, the Red Sox are a way better story so far. Hey, Alex Verdugo, you know, they get this guy for Mookie Betts. I mean, he was the main guy in that deal, and he's been fantastic in the field, clutch hits, and he's never going to be Mookie Betts, but that's a good part of the Red Sox story. But I don't know what happens with the Yanks. Tampa Bay has really got a big edge over them here early on, so we'll see if that continues.
Well, Garrett Cole goes today. It's another ace today. But this is only April 18th. We've only played 14, 15 games. And I guess my point this morning is I'm just saying, you know something? Baseball is so special. The games are so dramatic. and the players put it all on the line, and we've got 6 months of it coming up. So that's my point this morning. Bill, you agree with all this? Baseball's really just gotten wild for me.
Boy, both of you had some great insight on a lot of baseball you guys just talked about, and a lot of good players. And you also got Bumgarner throwing against Strasburg in Washington today. And, well, boy, Madison Bumgarner sure has gone down the drain quickly. My question to you this morning, Bruce, is to kind of look forward to the Philadelphia Phillies series. And I look at this Philly team, and I'm looking at their lineup today. McCutchen, Hoskins, Harper, Real Muto, Bond, Gregorius, Segura, Moniak. Why isn't this team blowing people away? They're only 7-7. This team is, on paper, is one of the top teams, and they just have not had any luck getting on board and trying to win. They struggle, it seems like, every year.
Yeah, it is kind of curious. Where's Greg Luzinski when you need him, you know? But it's hard to explain. I mean, you know, when Kapler was there, things kind of fell apart early, and I think they sort of lost any kind of swagger or confidence they had. But, you know, things can turn around in baseball so quick, and they do have. That's a really interesting lineup. I haven't seen too much of them. I've been concentrating on the Dodgers and the Giants and the A's and, you know, watching Acuna, Austin Washington for Soto, and Arizona for Bumgarner. I haven't seen a lot of the Phillies. You know, they're it's a little bit like the Angels. You know, this fascinating team to watch, but they just don't pitch enough to do damage. I suspect that's kind of at the heart of it. But I don't know. That's a story that we'll see unfold. And you know, that's when you roll off those names, you figure at some point they get hot.
Well, they've got some decent. Unfortunately, they have Matt Moore. Who can't get anybody out. It just got torched again yesterday. But,
yeah.
You know, between Nola and Zach Eflin and Chase Anderson and Zach Wheeler, it's a decent starting staff. I don't think they've hit a lot yet. Real Muto probably has not hit as much as they thought, and Harper's back is bothering him. But the difference with the Phillies, now they have a bullpen. Last year, their bullpen was one of the worst in the history of baseball. And now they seem to be a little bit better in the bullpen. This is going to be another tough series for the Giants because the Phillies look like they're more vulnerable to right-handed pitching again. And here come the Giants with all the lefties.
Yeah, well, the thing about the Phillies, too, is, you know, playing in that division with, you know, Atlanta's in last right now. That's not going to last. Washington's 5-7. That's not going to last. And then, you know, the Mets are off nice. And we saw Miami very, very competitive. Mm-hmm. So that's a deep division on top to bottom. So if you're not happening, if you're struggling, you're going to get left behind. So they got to, you know, right now, I mean, they're one game out. So that's April for you. Excuse me. But yeah, I that whole division is extremely watchable.
Yep, 7-7 for the Phillies right now. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting series. Bruce, to touch on a few of the historical things from this weekend, and we had a lot of fun with it yesterday. A lot of people pointed it out, but this weekend is the 1951 anniversary of the debut of number 7, Mickey Mantle. Wow.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, when they first brought him up, they gave him number 6. They go, this kid, we got Ruth is 3, Gehrig's 4, DiMaggio's 5, and we're going to give this kid number 6. How about that for pressure? And he didn't like it too much. And they, you know, he struggled his first season. They sent him down, and when they brought him back up, he was wearing number 7. But I tell you, I would love to have seen Mantle at this time. And then, you know, right off the bat in that 51 World Series, he tears up his knee. But Casey Stengel made a great quote. I mean, this was a kid. He'd never seen anybody that fast. And he had never seen anybody with that kind of power. He goes, this kid ain't logical. I mean, you can't imagine how good this guy was. And then what a confluence of history in that it was game 2 of the 51 series. The Yankees get to the series, of course. They're playing the New York Giants. And but DiMaggio, this was DiMaggio's last year, so Mantle was in right field as a rookie. Mays hits a fly ball to right center. DiMaggio and Mantle are converging on each other. At the last second, DiMaggio calls him off, and Mantle, who'd been sprinting to the play, all of a sudden puts on the brakes, and he catches his spikes on the rubber cover of a drain pipe and tears up his knee, and he was never... As great as he was, if he had healthy knees the whole time, you can't even imagine what he might have done.
1953, of course, in the same context of this weekend, he hits the legendary. Now, think about this for a second. 565-foot home run off of the great Chuck Stobbs of the Washington Senators at Old Griffith Stadium. But when you think of it, I hadn't really thought about it until I looked at it. 565, and if you look where it goes, it was one of those shots with the, you know, like in the newspaper where they have the diagonals.
The arrow.
The arrows, and they keep going. I mean, it hit off the scoreboard and went down the street, and Red Patterson, the PR guy, went out with a tape measure and measured it. 565. How about that?
Yeah, it wound up in somebody's yard.
Yes. That's right.
The thing amazing about that is that, I mean, that's one of the longest right-handed homers ever hit. I mean, who knows exactly what it was, but without question. Meanwhile, he's also got one of the most awesome left-handed home runs ever hit.
Yeah.
I mean, the one he hit at Yankee Stadium in 63 against Bill Fisher, when it looked like it was going completely out of the old stadium, and it hit the facade at way up there at the very top, and people swore that it was still going at the time. So, I mean, to be not only a switch hitter, but to have, you know, all-time epic homers just from pure distance and awe-inspiring qualities from both sides, it's just ridiculous.
Well, 565, and Bill, I was going to ask you this. You know, you've been on the mound. You've given up a couple. and you know, a long one? Who hit the longest home run, and did you just not turn around?
I believe it was George Foster. I kind of snuck in a curveball, and his eyes lit up, and that front shoulder never moved, and he launched it on me, and that was in New York when he was a Met, and boy, he could hit a lot of them. And, you know, he was at the Red Machine, too, and that lineup was atrocious, man, when you looked at it. But, yeah, George Foster got me, Marty.
Yeah, Fearless Foz. He was something else. Very outspoken, very nice man. We see him in spring training all the time. He signs autographs with the Ferguson Jenkins Foundation, that kind of stuff. That was Foster. Bill, how did you deal with Pete Rose, by the way? Because we're sort of the anniversary of him breaking Cobb's record, too. Well, what did you do with Rose?
Well, a lot of times I went away, sinkers away, and then we just put Johnny LeMaster more in the hole. He never really tried to pull the ball on me. He was that type of hitter, just like Tony Gwynn, that'd wait on that sinker away and push it out to left field. A lot of times I tried to jam him a couple times and got it in his hands. You know, he was just so aggressive at the plate. He'd stand right on the plate, try to get the ball inside, and he could hook it. Just one of the best hitters I ever faced. And, you know, it's just so sad because he was, in our era when we played, the best player. He hustled, he played well on defense, and he was majestic as a hitter. And it's just sad that he's not in the Hall of Fame.
What do you think, Bruce?
I agree with all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Did he give you the eyes kind of when he was at the plate? Did he look at you and try to stare you down at all?
No, I really never got into that. A lot of those guys tried to do that, you know, especially my first couple of years. They were like, who is this rookie out there trying to get me out? And they'd always try to do that. And then Andy Van Slyke was the guy in the on-deck circle, used to scream at me, oh, throw me that pitch, Lesky. And I'm just like, who's saying that? You know, but Van Slyke and I got into a couple of things. I drilled him a couple of times. I got in trouble for that, but... you know, he was a real good hitter with the Pirates. He really put the ball, and then he ended up being with the Cardinals. So, yeah, those guys, they always try to intimidate the young guys. They don't do that anymore, Bruce. Why is that? Why don't people play with guys like that?
I don't know. I wouldn't mess with Soto, I'll tell you that much. I think it does go on. I'm struggling to think of a good example right now, but it's not quite the same as it was then. It's funny though. You mentioned Rose. Was it Trevor Bauer recently who said something like Rose wouldn't be any big deal today? I mean, are you kidding? I mean, he was such a great hitter. I loved the way he used the whole field, and he didn't. He went into the stare downs. He was much too interested in getting his next hit and where he could put it. And he had a knack of putting it, you know, where the pitch was. This is what we're missing so much today. But you know, he was a guy that if you try to intimidate him, that's just a really bad idea. It's only going to get worse for you.
Boy, what about Tony Perez, Bill?
Tony Perez could pop, boy. He was total pull hitter, so it was slider central for him. He could try to pull my slider all day. That lineup still was good. Johnny Bench was still in there in the early 80s. And, you know, he was another one that tried to intimidate you, stand right on top of the plate. That's what those guys did in our era, Marty and Bruce, and you guys both know it. You know, Frank Robinson was really the one that said, you got to throw inside. You have to throw inside. These guys will intimidate you, stand right on top of the plate, and they're looking the ball away. And he really did teach me to go inside more, even off the plate. Get them off the plate. Frank's big word was, hey, this whole plate is yours. A hitter is going to try to take a third of that away from you, and you need to take it back. And that was a great education for me. That's how I teach pitching now when I go to young high school and college kids. You have to throw inside, and if you're fearful to throw inside, you're going to be backing up third a lot more than you want.
And the thing about today's game is that so many players, young and old, not only crowd the plate but are diving into the pitch. Mm-hmm. It's just a common thing now, and you've got to deal with that. I mean, forget about stare downs. You've got to make it work, you know, with the reality of a pitch inside and get him off of there. And you can't really get him off. They're right back in there, and it's so annoying to me to see a guy lean into a pitch that's almost a strike and get hit. And there he goes to first base. I mean, you throw not a bad pitch, and you get burned by it.
Well, you know, the one I love is Montefusco and Johnny Bench. And when they got into it, Montefusco, of course, gets Bench out and says, he's not so hot. And then you've got to face him again in Cincinnati like a week later. And Bench hits one like 900 feet off of Montefusco, and that was the end of that. But Montefusco had his moments. He got into people. You know that?
Oh yeah, he was pretty much a loud mouth. You know, kind of a swaggering Jersey guy who had some good stuff. And but he was also a really fun loving guy. He wasn't like this evil presence out there, like, you know, like a Kevin Brown who just saw no humor in anything ever, you know. and he did a lot of great things. He backed it up with a lot of great performances, and you know, the fans loved him. You kind of had the feeling he wasn't going to pitch for 15 years, and he certainly didn't, but he was a guy who loved the game, and you know, loved to show off a little bit, you know, challenge guys, and sometimes, you know, in the paper or where the guy can hear it, and that is going to burn you. But he was undaunted. He'd come right back at you.
Yeah, the Giants needed him. They needed that excitement that he brought. One last thing, Bruce. Again, historically, 1960, and Bill, you can appreciate this. Trader Frank Lane for the Cleveland Indians trades Rocky Colavito to the Tigers for Harvey Keen. And Rocky, of course, has big years with the Tigers. Harvey Keen is a batting champion, ends up with the Giants. And that's one of the most famous trades ever. And it was right before. Look at the date. In 1960, the season was just starting, and they made that big trade.
I mean, this is like trading Tony Gwynn for Barry Bonds or something. Colavito led the American League in homers. He tied with Killebrew. And Keene had hit .353 and led the league in hitting. I mean, what a deal. Trader Lane. And, Keene, it just didn't work out for Cleveland. First of all, the fans were incensed because, you know, Rocky Colavito, don't knock the rock. You know, he was a power hitter, and he wound up continuing to be a great power hitter, you know, with the Tigers. And Keene was, they didn't know it at the time, but he was kind of on a slow fade out of there. He played six more years. But right after that 1960 season, Trader Lane realized he made a mistake. He traded him for Willie Kirkland and Johnny Antonelli coming to the Giants.
Wow. Well, Harvey Keen, Willie Mays, and others have told me that Harvey Keen was the best line drive hitter they ever saw.
Yeah, he was unbelievable. In the period leading up to that, like 53 up to 1960, he led the league in hitting four times. Absolutely a rock at the plate. Really good ball player.
Mm. Well, Frank Lane traded his manager. How about that?
You know, also that year he traded Norm Cash in Detroit for Steve Dimeter. How about that one, Bill?
Storm and Norman, he could play some first base.
Well, he gave the Tigers a bunch of good years.
He sure did.
What a great player, yeah. Traded Joe Gordon for Jimmy Dykes. Traded the manager in the middle of the season. Come on. Come on.
I want to see them
that's
do that this year.
Trading right there.
What are we talking about? But that's. I'm glad we could do this on Sunday morning because I'm Bruce, and Bill, I tell you, baseball is back. These games have been just awesome, and we've got 148 more to go. And it's really been quite a couple of weeks, so I'm glad we could chat about it this morning.
Yeah, I can't wait for today. We got another great slate of games, so you bet, Marty. Look forward to next week.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. Thank you.
See you guys.
All right. That is the great Bruce Jenkins on a Sunday morning. Isn't it something that baseball – it hit me last night watching the Giant game. I mean, there were so many moves, and there was so much excitement. And all around baseball, I just looked at the scoreboard this morning, just about – and the White Sox with the no-hitter and the Padres with the no-hitter and the Padre game the other night, Musgrove, who pitched a no-hitter, ended up playing left field to end the game.
Well, you know what, Marty? When you look at the standings, you know, besides the Dodgers, it's really a 500 league. Everybody's really playing around 500, which only opens up more eyes in each division. Of course, the Dodgers are just playing so well. They could be 15-0. Those two losses came with Kenley Jansen with Oakland for one, and their first game in Colorado was just a joke for them. Right. But that team is just so solid and strong. But you know what? Things happen to good teams like that. A couple injuries. You know, Bellinger's another one. They're playing without him, and they don't even know how long he'll be out.
Yeah, fractured fibula. Mm. So, yeah, that's not day-to-day, I'll tell you that. All right. Well, we'll take a break. Good Sunday morning. And we've got baseball coming up. Alex Wood will make his debut for the Giants today, the left-hander against Pablo Lopez. A right-hander, another one of those young phenoms for the Miami Marlins. We'll be back with more. Kerry Crowley's going to join us right after this.
Hey, it's Brian Murphy. Let your money do more for you. Discover Provident Credit Union's Pick a Term Certificate Special. With Provident's Pick a Term Certificate, you can watch your money grow quickly. Secure a 4.75% annual percentage yield with a 3, 6, or 9-month term, or earn 4.50% with a 12-month term. This limited-time offer is a great option for high dividends on a term that works best for you. Earn up to 4.75% and achieve your short-term savings goals with ease. So whether you're saving for a vacation, a down payment, or just building your emergency fund, Provident has you covered. Don't miss out. Secure one of the most competitive rates available on the market. Open an account and start earning more. Visit providentcu.org or stop by a branch for more details. This rate is effective as of March 26th, 2024. Minimum balance requirement of $10,000. Early withdrawal penalties may apply. Federally insured by the NCUA. For additional information, please visit providentcu.org.